ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यामनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितां तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिकाकांता राधाकांता नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचना गौरांगी श्रीराधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमः ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामीनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सरस्वते गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैता गदाधार शिवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामो राम रामो हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामो राम रामो हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। आई वुड लाइक टू वेलकम ऑल devotees and guests for our Sunday feast program. Today for the Sunday feast class we have chosen from this timeless spotless epic Srimad Bhagavatam, and we will be discussing some lessons from one very important pastime. We are all sadhakas. Sadhakas means those who are practicing devotional service. We are practicing bhakti yoga with a desire that we will develop love for Krishna. And as we are practicing, we can learn many lessons from different pastimes of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So this pastime is from the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 8, 9, 10, 11. This is the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. Now, a few years ago, Gaur Gopal Prabhu gave a beautiful seminar in Hyderabad on this topic. And also, Gaurang Prabhu gave a series of lectures on Dhruva Maharaj. So, I was very inspired and I compiled from their notes and also some other lessons from different devotees. So I'll be chewing the remnants given by my senior god brothers. I'll be sharing it with all of you. Now, there are many lessons actually in this pastime. Maybe more than 100. So many things we can learn. Not just theoretically, but actually we have to implement them in our day-to-day life. Now, there are so many lessons, and if we take the pastime slowly, we may not be able to cover more than 5-6. So I was in a dilemma. I was thinking, should we just cover all the lessons, just little, or take one lesson and then elaborate on it? This is like, you know, having a wonderful feast, prasadam. Sometimes you have, in some special programs, you have many items. I saw once, there are hundreds of items kept, all Punjabi, South Indian, pizza, everything was there. So devotees are bewildered whether to take little of everything. But then there, when you are eating prasad or honoring prasad, you can't eat more than a certain amount, you know. So you're satiated after some time. But Krishna Katha is so powerful and so nourishing that we can either take one item unlimitedly or take all the items little. You'll never get exhausted. You'll never get satiated. There is so much to discuss. There is so much to learn. So we will glorify Krishna and Krishna's pure devotees in this pastime. So we will take the pastime in a series of verses. So I'll first take 3-4 verses and then what are the different lessons we can learn. So the pastime begins like this. Maitreya Rishi is telling Vidura about Brahma's descendants. So he says, "My dear Vidura, O best of the Kuru dynasty, I shall now describe to you the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu who are born of a part of plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Swayambhuva Manu, he had 2 sons by his wife Shatarupa. Maharaj Priyavrat, the elder one, and the younger son, Maharaj Uttanapad. And now, Uttanapad had 2 queens named Sunuti and Suruchi. Suruchi was much more dear to the king. Sunuti, who had a son named Dhruva, was not his favorite. So, this is the first section. Here Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that actually, Swayambhuva Manu's 2 sons, Priyavrat, Uttanapad, the way Maitreya Rishi is narrating this pastime, he should have logically spoken first about Priyavrat Maharaj. And then, because Priyavrat Maharaj is the elder son. And then even if he's not speaking about Priyavrat Maharaj, he should have spoken about Uttanapad. But directly he goes to Uttanapad's neglected queen's son, Dhruva. So it's not in proper order, technically. But why is Maitreya Rishi speaking this? Because he is excited. He is eager, enthusiastic to glorify Krishna and Krishna's devotees. He is not going in the proper systematic order. So Srila Prabhupada writes this point, that he is eager to glorify Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So this is the first lesson we can learn, that we should also be always eager to glorify Krishna and Krishna's devotees. That means basically we should have enthusiasm for hearing and chanting. And when we have such enthusiasm, then even if there is some mistake here and there, there is no mistake actually. There is no mistake in the purpose to glorify Krishna. Srila Prabhupada also writes in his Bhagavatam commentary, first canto, that English is a foreign language for me and my writing of this Bhagavatam may have many literary discrepancies, maybe full of faults. But I'm sure that those who are sincerely seeking the truth, they will appreciate my sincere attempt to glorify Krishna. And I hope and pray that this work will bring about a revolution in human society. And that's exactly what happened. So we have to be always eager to glorify Krishna. And this is the qualification of a devotee. He never misses an opportunity to hear about Krishna and speak about Krishna. Srila Prabhupada took so much pains to glorify Krishna. But those were burden of love. He was actually ecstatic. Once he was sitting with his Brajvasi friend in Vrindavan, the Damodar temple, he was writing Bhagavatam purports. So his Brajvasi friend entered. Prabhupada looked at him and smiled and continued writing. And his friend said, "Why are you smiling?" And Prabhupada said, "I am just amazed. by this pen. He showed the pen to his friend, and that pen was a Parker pen. Prabhupada said, this is very symbolic, because by writing this Bhagavatam purports by this Parker pen, I am giving all the conditioned souls a chance to go beyond this material world. I am giving them a chance to Parker. I am giving them a chance to go beyond this material world. So both of them laughed. So Srila Prabhupada was actually, through his Bhagavatam purports like this, such a sweet purport here, he's giving us a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. But this is the beauty about Krishna consciousness. Not only does it, see, these are the two amazing advantages of practicing Krishna consciousness, of hearing and chanting. One is, we enjoy now. Susukham kartum avyayam. It's pleasurable, Krishna says in the Gita. Coming together, hearing, chanting is very pleasurable. Not only that, after we give up this life, we go back to the eternal association of the Lord. But there also, we are eternally enjoying in our constitutional position as the servant of the Lord and His servants. So, Srila Prabhupada revealed the tremendous taste he had and enthusiasm he had to glorify Krishna. Once when he was in New Vrindavan, so in 1976, Prabhupada was 80 years old. He had a lot of pain in his stomach and head, and he was sitting in a couched position, like, you know, like that bow position, the child in the womb position, like this he was sitting. That was officially darshan time. Prabhupada was supposed to meet all the devotees, but because Prabhupada was in pain, devotees came. They were sitting in the room quietly. Nobody was talking anything. Prabhupada was just quiet. And Prabhupada knew these devotees have come. So Prabhupada turned to one of his disciples and said, please read from the Krishna book. So the devotee was reading, and all the devotees were hearing for a long time. And after a long time, the devotees realized they were painfully aware of Srila Prabhupada's ill health. So they quietly decided to leave the room and give Prabhupada the privacy that he needed to recuperate from his sickness. So as they were leaving, Prabhupada realized that they are leaving. Prabhupada opened his eyes and said, any questions? So immediately devotee sat down. And then one devotee asked, Prabhupada, what about Kali Yuga? And then somebody asked about Krishna. So then Prabhupada called for 11th canto. Then they had discussion. Another 2 hours they went on discussing. So Satsarup Maharaj writes in Prabhupada Nectar that this is the enthusiasm and eagerness Srila Prabhupada had to glorify Krishna. And not only Srila Prabhupada was glorifying Krishna, and he was deriving great transcendental pleasure, he was also desperate that all of us take to this process very seriously. And it is so inspiring to see so many devotees congregate every Sunday afternoon and come in large numbers to hear about Lord Krishna. For this is the process for Kali Yuga. Because in Kali Yuga, people's vision has been completely blinded by massive ignorance everywhere. The propaganda that is going on outside is so discouraging. At such times, we have to come together, Sankirtan, we have to come together and hear and chant about Krishna. We will get spiritual strength. Krishne Swadham Upagate Jnana Dharma Bhi Saha Kalo Nashta Drishameva Puranarko Dhunodita. When Krishna went away to spiritual world, Krishne Swadham Upagate, two things went with him. Jnana Dharma Bhi Saha, Jnana and Dharma, religious principles and knowledge also went away. And because of this going away, Kalo Nashta Drishameva, Kali Yuga people's vision has been blinded. They are complete ignorance. But Puran Arko Dhunodita, Bhagavatam is like the ark, a sun which has arisen to dissipate this darkness. The clouds of ignorance have covered our vision, and we are completely in this darkened age. Imagine somebody is in darkened room, complete dark, and he has a sword with him and is madly running around with the sword. And there are many such people in this room also with the sword, and they are all running. So what will happen? We'll injure ourselves and injure others also. And that's exactly what is happening in modern society. People have technology, which is like a sword. They have a lot of power. And they are blind. So there is all around chaos, chaotic situation. And therefore, Bhagavatam comes as a savior. So when we hear about Krishna, our hearts get purified and we develop attraction for Krishna. But unfortunately, in modern times, our condition is so pathetic that first of all, we have got this body, material body, which itself, it's like a block, you know. It doesn't allow us to be spiritually realized. The body has its own limitations. It offers so many limitations. On top of that, we are in this material world with the material body. And on top of that, there is so much bombardment, propaganda, advertisements. So a person gets completely intoxicated by the bodily identification. We are convinced I am this body. Secondly, we are in this material world where everybody is convinced I am this body. And then on top of that, when we see TV, we see ads for shampoos and all bodily decorations we see. Everything is for the body. So when we will understand about the needs of the soul? Actually, the Nitya describes the condition of the soul in the material world through an analogy. Our condition is like that of a monkey. A monkey is never peaceful. You'll never see a monkey sitting quietly and chanting. Monkey means he has to be jumping around. But we are not an ordinary monkey. Markatasya surapanam tatra vrischika damshakam tanmadye bhuta sanchara edva tadva bhavishyati. Imagine a monkey which is restless by nature. Markatasya surapanam, on top of that, is heavily drunk. What will be his condition? And on top of that, tatra vrischika damshakam, he has been stung by a scorpion. So how restless he will be. And on top of that, tanmadye bhuta sanchara, a ghost has also entered his body. Yadva tadva bhavishyati. We can imagine there will be complete mess all around. So we are also completely intoxicated. And then on top of that, we add so many false identifications and attachments and designations to our own body. In terms of community, race, color of the skin, all these things. So basically, the whole idea is we go so far away from Krishna. So at such a time, when we come together and hear and chant about Krishna, and we show eagerness, we develop attraction. Otherwise, you catch a person on the road, he'll say, I'm very busy, no time. So therefore, book distribution, marathon, and having programs, preaching is so important. Just to stop the people and tell them, just see your life. Hear about Krishna. Otherwise, our life is so fast. It's like going full speed. But we don't know where we are going. Full speed. It's like a pilot announcing in the plane. Passengers, we have good news and bad news. Good news is we are flying at 1000 miles per hour. Excellent. But bad news is we don't know where we are going. It's amazing. The advancement and everything is going on so nice. But nobody knows what is happening. Kalo nashta drishameva. I'm reminded of a story. There was one king, he saw that he was going with his minister on a survey of the kingdom. And he saw that one poor man was happy. He was giving a big smile and he had a small hut. And he was playing with his baby. Very happy family. He saw man, his wife and two small children. Very good, very happy. And king became a little envious. He told his minister, I am the king and you are the minister. We are so successful, we are so rich. But we are not happy. And he is so happy. What does he have? How is he so happy and we are not so happy? So the minister said, my dear king, that is because he has not joined our club. So king said, what club? So minister said, see, we are both members of the 99 club. So the king said, what is this 99? I have heard of Lions Club and Rotaract Club, but what is this 99 club? So the minister said, I'll show you. Come in the night. So in the night they came. So the minister quietly went outside his house, a poor man hut, and he kept this huge pot, big box. And he told the king, let's watch from distance. They watched. Morning, this poor man woke up. He opened the door. He saw the box. He called his wife. There is something somebody has kept here. And immediately they opened the box and there were gold coins. And this was the time when one gold coin you could get only if you had 100 silver coins. And one silver coin you could get only if you had 1,000 copper coins. And ordinary people had a salary of 500, 600 copper coins. It was unimaginable to get a box filled with gold coins. So he immediately called his wife and they started counting. 1, 2, 3. And when they counted, they saw there was exactly 99 gold coins. And they said, 99? Something is wrong. 100 hona chahiye. Wapas gino. They again counted. They counted, and they saw that only 99. So the man told his wife, and this king and the minister are watching all this. So the man told his wife, 99, 100 hoga to kitna achha hoga. But how can you get that one gold coin extra? For that you need so many silver coins. And for one silver coin you need so many copper coins. That means so much he has to do extra time, different shifts. His wife also had to go to work now. Because they had to get that one gold coin to make it 100. So as he was doing that extra bit of work, working 2 shifts, 3 shifts, his wife was working, doing part-time job. And suddenly the wife, because she saw so many gold coins, she was tempted to buy a big house. And she wanted more clothes. And the children said, we want this. For the man said, okay, let me spend a few gold coins. So he spent a few. It became 96. Then he had to earn 4 now. Because by this time he earned 2 gold coins, but he still had 2 balance. But by this time, he had to spend another few gold coins. And he went on. And he was desperate. So after a few months, the king and minister saw this man has a big mansion instead of a hut. And he has tie, coat, he's running. His wife is also busy. Everybody's busy. They have a car. They are extremely busy. So the king and minister asked him, sir, are you happy? Yes, I'm very happy. I'm hardworking. But you look so sad. Why don't you be peaceful? No, you should work hard. Karmane vadhikaraste. Krishna says you should work hard. Just keep working. I'm happy. Look at me. I've got such a big house. If you have everything, why don't you relax? No, I have to work hard. I have to earn more money. It was completely ambitious. And the king turned to his minister and said, now I see he's miserable. He's in so much anxiety. Morning to night, he's trying to earn more and more gold coins. So he had joined the 99 club. Actually, one devotee was saying that in some interview, somebody was asked one question in some television interview, some famous personality. If you are given 8 crore rupees, if you have a choice of getting 8 crore rupees or 8 children, what would you prefer? I would prefer 8 children. Because he said, if I get 8 children, I will be satisfied. But if I have 8 crore, I will want more. So he was saying in a lighter vein. So the point is, we can never be satisfied. We have actually, if you see carefully analyze, many times our lives are such that we can make Krishna the center of our life. But we are so busy with artificial needs that we have no time for bhakti, we have no time for Krishna. Therefore, we have to hear a Srimad Bhagavatam. If we hear constantly, Vyasadeva has guaranteed, Asyam vai shruya manayam, Krishne parama purushe, bhaktir utpadate pumsa, shoka moha bhaya paha. You know, sometimes people say, what are the practical benefits of coming for Bhagavatam class, coming to temple? These are the 3 practical benefits. Asyam vai shruya manayam, constantly hear, bhaktir utpadate pumsa, you will develop bhakti for Krishna. If you're not interested in that, shoka moha bhaya apaha, shoka will go away, lamentation, moha, illusion will go away, and bhaya, fear will go away. Everybody is suffering from these 3. Shoka means lamentation, lamenting about the past generally. Lamentation, aisa ho gaya, aisa ho gaya. Moha, illusion about present, and bhaya, fear about future. So past, present and future, we are miserable. Therefore, when we hear about Krishna, our attraction for Krishna develops. And also, see, these are not ordinary stories. These have transcendental potency. There is a transcendental potency in this sound vibration. It has this special effect to give happiness and peace to our heart. It is not ordinary. Dhruva Maharaj's story is not some ordinary child's, grandmother's bedtime story. You know, grandmothers tell the children, no. This is powerful purifying effect, and there are so many lessons we can learn. So therefore, we should be eager and enthusiastic to hear. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself would hear Dhruva Maharaj pastime 100 times. So Gadadhar Pandit would speak this pastime and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would hear attentively, and Gadadhar Pandit would speak as if Mahaprabhu is hearing for the first time. And then after the whole pastime is over, then Mahaprabhu would say, speak again. And again he would start the same pastime. King Uttanapad had two queens and same pastime, and Mahaprabhu would relish. So therefore we have to, now you may say we don't have that taste. So we have to come and begin the process. And as we start hearing, slowly, slowly, this dormant consciousness will awake. So this is the first lesson we can learn by the story so far, that whether there are literary mistakes or no, we just have to be eager and enthusiastic to glorify Krishna. After that, Maitreya Rishi is continuing the pastime. Now this is very interesting. Hear this carefully. There are many lessons we can learn from this section. Once upon a time, King Uttanapad was patting the son of Suruchi. His name was Uttam. So he has two queens, Suruchi and Suniti. Suruchi's son is Uttam, Suniti's son is Dhruva. And Suruchi, she sees that King Uttanapad is patting her son. At that time, little Dhruva also tried to get on the king's lap. But the king was quiet. He did not very much encourage this. Meanwhile, when Dhruva was trying to get on the lap, Suruchi, his stepmother, she came. And she became very envious of the child. And with great pride, she began to speak so loudly that even the king could hear. And she told the little Dhruva, "My dear child, you do not deserve to sit on the throne or the lap of your father, the king. Surely, you are also the son of the king. But because you did not take your birth from my womb, you are not qualified to sit on your father's lap. My dear child, you are unaware that you were born not of my womb but of another woman. Therefore, you should know that your attempt is doomed to failure. You are trying to fulfill a desire which is impossible to fulfill. If at all you desire to rise to the throne of the king, then you have to undergo severe austerities. First, you must satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan. And then when you are favored by him because of such worship, then you can sit on the throne? No. Then you have to die and then take birth from my womb. And then you can sit on your father's lap. So Dhruva is shocked. He is hurt. His heart is pierced by these sharp words of his stepmother. And he runs away. He goes from that place. So from this section, so far what we have discussed, the first section where Maitreya Rishi is excited, and the lesson we learnt was, we have to be eager and enthusiastic to glorify Krishna. And now, we learn many lessons from this section. Here, we can learn from Dhruva, his attempt to rise on the father's lap, sit on the father's lap, was thwarted. Actually, we are also attempting to climb up through power, position, and prestige, and get a lot of material security and material assets. But the lesson we learn is, material source of security will always let us down. This material world has been arranged in such a way that what Dhruva experienced as a small child, we will all experience at some point of time if we hold on to something material as a source of our shelter and security. That is the lesson we have to learn. It will all be thwarted at some point of time. Now, it's not that devotees don't work outside and they don't have material assets. Don't get me wrong. The point I'm making is, when a devotee works and he has his career, family, he is sure, he's clear about what is his goal. He knows he wants Krishna. He knows his actual permanent asset is the holy name, service to Vaishnavas, Krishna, which is eternal. So what happens? Because of this focus, even when he sees ups and downs in his material life, he is not affected because he has not identified with it. You getting it? Like, if I have a strong identification with my watch, I constantly keep looking at my watch, this is my watch. And then if this watch gets lost, I'll be completely shattered. But if I'm using this watch for my service and I'm focusing on Krishna, then when the inevitable happens, I will carry on with my duty. I will not get so bogged down that I'll become a nervous wreck if my priorities are clear in life. So Dhruva, for him, as a small boy, every child wants affection of father. He wanted to sit on his father's lap, but it was immediately that attempt was thwarted. He was hurt. So we will all be hurt if we focus on something other than Krishna as our sense of security. We have a sense of identity with that. There is a saying in America that actually there is no difference between small children and big people. It is said that both are attached to toys. The only difference is in the size of the toys and the cost of the toys. That's all. But both are after perishable things. Because time is such a powerful energy of the Lord that the time separates all of us from all those things which we hold dear to ourselves. I remember when we were young, I'd read a book on Muhammad Ali, who was a great boxer. He had won the Olympic gold medal in 1960, Rome Olympics. He was then known as Cassius Clay. So he was, from childhood, he was dreaming about winning a gold medal, and he eventually got it. But when he came back to his Ohio state, the racial discrimination against blacks was continuing, and he was discriminated, even though he had won an Olympic gold medal. So he got so disgusted, he threw that gold medal in the Ohio River. And then he changed his religion, he became Muhammad Ali. And then he became a professional boxer, and he was very powerful. He became world champion. In fact, there is a video recording I saw where he says loudly proclaiming, "I am the greatest." You know, he was actually a very great boxer. In fact, when he used to come and fight in the ring, his fans would sing a song, a very popular song at that time. "I fly like a bird, I sting like a bee, I am the greatest Muhammad Ali." And they would sing that. "I am a," you know, like that. "I fly like a bird, I sting like," and he would come and he would knock off one adversary after another with his right fist and left fist. So he was taking shelter of all these assets, these physical assets. Now we can see in our own lifetime, all this dwindled. And today, Muhammad Ali, he cannot move his hand. I don't know if he's still alive, but I remember 1996 Atlanta Olympics, the final torch of flame was given to him to light that. And that big torch, you know, they run with this torch in Olympics. They keep running for, I don't know why they run. I think they are symbolic to tell us that material world is a blazing fire of, maybe they want to say that, Sansara Davanal or whatever. They're reminding us. So they run and run, and finally it comes to this final man, who is supposed to be a very important man. And he takes it, and the whole billions of people are watching on TV. And now he has Alzheimer's, I think, disease, and he can't, Parkinson's, he can't move his body. So the same hand with which he has knocked off so many opponents, look at the way material nature is so cruel. Now he cannot move his hand. So that final torch was given to him, and he was standing, shivering, and he had to take that torch, and he had to put it in that flame. Such a simple thing. If this was given to him 35 years ago, he would have just put it, no problem. But now, as they gave it to him, as he was holding it, he was shivering. And the whole world watched with bated breath. Will he? Won't he? Everybody was nervous. The organizers are biting their nails because imagine if it falls off or something happens. It's a big flop show then. And then finally somehow put it after a few minutes of anxiety. And the whole world celebrated, wow, great victory, determination and power and this and that. Nobody was seeing how time has ravaged, how time has destroyed all power. That nobody is seeing. Everybody is glorifying, clapping, oh, excellent. The whole world was celebrating, but the organizers, I'm sure, they just simply heaved a sigh of relief. Oh, he just put it somehow. Yeah, such a big man, such a powerful man. So he was asked after that, "Do you still proclaim to be the greatest?" And he made this statement. He said, "Yes, But he was humbled. So he very honest, he said, I am the greatest fool to have thought that I am the greatest. He is humble, so he admitted that it is difficult. So we can see that in this world, nobody cares. Especially material world, material nature is so powerful that she knocks you down, however great you are. So if you have a sense of identity with any of the material possessions or body, however beautiful you are, material nature will take away that beauty. So if we have already invested our attachment to Krishna, then when all these things are being taken away, we take more and more shelter of Krishna. So nice. Time will eventually take it away. Krishna has made that law. So it's not that devotee's assets will not be taken away. It's not that devotee will not become ugly or devotee will not lose his beauty. But because devotee is focusing on Krishna, he is always blissful. Now just like I given this example earlier. In the Vedic culture, when the girl gets married, on the day of the marriage, she cries a lot. Because she is feeling that she's crying because of two reasons. One is because she's feeling that she has to, you know, leave her parents and her family members whom she has so much attachment. And the second reason is sometimes she has apprehension. I'm going to a new family. I don't know what will happen. Uncertainty also makes her. So she cries and there is a lot of separation. But if the girl already has had a relationship in the sense, you know, a courtship has preceded her wedding and she's known her to be in-laws, everybody very well in advance. And then on the day of the wedding, she'll be excited. I remember one of my cousin sisters when she got married like this, and she was telling us, I'm not feeling like crying. I'm supposed to be crying, right? I remember we were all laughing. So she just kept a sober face, you know, out of politeness. And I remember one of us told her that, I know you are keeping a sober face, but you are silently celebrating at the prospect of going to your husband's house. So, a materialistic person, whole life he has pursued material assets as his whole and soul. He has strong identification. So, at the time of death, when he has to leave everything, that strong attachment is very painful. He just can't think of anything. He's very attached. And also he's uncertain. He's not sure where he's going to go after death. What will happen? Because of that fear, he cries. Because of that attachment, he cries. But a devotee, his courtship with Krishna has been there for so many years. So when the time comes to leave the body, he already knows where he's going. He's excited. I remember Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, before he left this world, few days before we were hearing these pastimes, that he would see in the morning and he would say, oh, one more day, the sun has risen, I'm still here. I'm not going back to Krishna. He was excited at the prospect of going to Krishna. So, a devotee knows that these material attachments will go away, but because he's investing his relationship, investing in his time and energy in his relationship with Krishna, when the eventual thing happens, he's ready. He's happy. Otherwise, if we invest all our attachment on material things, at the time of death, even though we want to give up, but the conditionings and the desire of the past is so strong that it becomes very difficult. One of our devotees who comes for our program, his neighbor was recently dying and all his relatives were telling him, Papa, forget everything. Now just chant. And he also had gone. He was telling, just chant. Now it's no time. He said, no, he wanted all the family members to be there. And they were assuring him, they're all there. Just chant. Just chant Hare Krishna. And he was just looking at them. And he was just making a sign like this, constantly. And then he would sit quiet. And then he would gasp for breath. So they told him, now forget all this, just chant Hare Krishna. And again he would do like this. And after some time, again he would fall back. He refused to chant. The devotees chanted and then eventually left his body. So then one of the devotees asked the family member, why he was doing like this? He said, our father, from the age of 20 till he died, 80, 60 years he spent, he had a business of cloth. Whole day would be in the cloth shop measuring cloth. That was his job. Whole day. So that became such a habit that even when he was dying, he was just moving his hands like this. So conditioning is very strong. Imagine if your whole life chanting Hare Krishna, at the time of death spontaneously will remember Krishna. So we have a golden chance, not only chant every day, but once in a week, Sunday, come together and build such excellent relationships with so many Vaishnavas that if we are dying and we can have so many Vaishnavas praying for us and coming and helping us to remember Krishna. So we should make our priorities clear. As I was coming for this class, one devotee sent me a story which was, I thought I should share it with all of you. It's a very amazing story. This happened just last month. In New York, in the subway, one interesting scene took place last month. They have different beggars. In Western countries, they don't actually beg like this. Many of them, they just perform some music or do something and they keep their hat and they beg for money like that. So there was a violinist, there was a beggar who was playing violin and he had his hat down. Nobody looked at him. And some small children would only look, would be going with their parents and they would just look at him and the parents' mother would pull the child and they would go away. So he played for 2 hours on the roadside, in that subway, and he got some $30. New York subway, this is a true story. But why this story is shocking is because this man was playing the violin was none other than Mr. Joshua Bell, who is supposed to be the legend in violin. He has composed original masterpieces. And just 2 days before this event of begging in the subway, he had performed for a packed audience in an auditorium in Washington and he had earned $35 million. And 2 days later, nobody saw him because Washington Post, a newspaper, wanted to do a survey about how popular and famous really are those who are apparently famous. So they had requested him and he had agreed to be a part of this study. So he came to the subway and was playing the same tunes and same melodies what he was doing there. And nobody even looked at him. So what a study. And the study revealed how we may be a great superhero, but everybody was running. Everybody was busy in their own world. Nobody cared for him. So what to speak of when he loses his popularity, when he becomes old, or when he is no longer able to play. Or maybe even if people know him, after a few years, even when he is dead and gone, he will be simply a name. So will all of us be. So therefore, a sense of security, we have to be clear about what we want. And therefore, as devotees, we have to take shelter of Krishna. And we'll see how Dhruva's mother, Suniti, encourages him to do that. Because helplessly depending on Krishna and taking Krishna's shelter is the only solution. There is a nice explanation given in this regard by the Acharyas in the case of Draupadi. When Draupadi's Vastraharan was taking place and she was desperately begging all the elders in the Kuru assembly to help her and nobody was able to help her. That time it seems Rukmini and Krishna were in Dwarka and Rukmini told Krishna, "Krishna, why don't you do something?" Krishna said, "I don't have a vehicle which can take me very fast to Draupadi. I want to help her but I cannot go." So Rukmini said, "What do you mean? You have Daruka? If it's an expert chariot driver, you can go." He said, "No, Daruka is too slow." And as they were talking, meanwhile, Draupadi's all attempts failed. And Dushasan was pulling her sari. And she was trying and fighting to hold on. And as Dushasan was pulling and as she was fighting, Rukmini turned to Krishna and said, "Krishna, do something. You have Garuda with you, who is faster than Daruka. Take Garuda." And Krishna said, "Garuda is also slow." And meanwhile, as Dushasan was pulling, Draupadi gave up all efforts and she just raised her hands and loudly called out to Krishna for help. Intensely she called out. And then Rukmini said, "Krishna, now it is said that you are faster than the mind. Why don't you go and help?" And he said, "No, this is also not fast." And then Draupadi, meanwhile, she was intensely calling out to Krishna and she called out, "Krishna, please help me. You are the only shelter." And when she said that, and tears are coming from her eyes, at that time Rukmini said, "Krishna, do something." And before she could complete her sentence, Krishna was gone. Krishna was not there. Krishna was there. He had incarnated as the sari and he had protected her. And the whole pastime took place. We know that. And later Rukmini asked Krishna, "How did you go so fast? What happened? What was that vehicle that you took that was faster than Garuda, Daruka and the mind?" And Krishna said, "Helpless tears of my devotees are the fastest vehicle." So we all go through agonizing experiences in life. We all go through trauma, ups and downs, heartbreaks, misunderstandings. We all go through problems. None of the problems are so big that we can't offer them to Krishna for healing. None of them are so overwhelming that we can't turn to Krishna and helplessly depend on Krishna and take shelter of Krishna. So therefore, we have to call out to Krishna and not take shelter of material possessions and material assets. Gajendra reveals this in the 8th canto. Namami me gyataya aturam gaja kuta karinya prabhavanti mochitum grahena pashena vidhaturavruto pyaham chatamyami paramparayanam. Gajendra's pastime is, Gajendra was in an elephant's body and the crocodile caught his leg. And Gajendra was desperate. He struggled to come out, but the crocodile was not leaving him. Finally, he gave up all hopes of fight and he turned to Lord Vishnu and was offering intense prayers. And this is one of those prayers where he is saying, Namami me gyataya aturam gaja. Kuta karinya prabhavanti mochitam. Where are my wives, children, brothers, relatives? Where are they all now? They are not able to help me and free me from the clutches of this crocodile. Grahena pashena vidhaturavruto. This is not crocodile. This is Kala. This is my fate. I am finished. Pyaham chatam yami paramparayanam. So better I take shelter of that supreme Lord, Lord Vishnu, who can free me permanently from these clutches of suffering. Let me take shelter of Lord Vishnu. And then he recognizes this crocodile to be not a crocodile but a snake. Yakashchanesho balinontakoragat. Prachanda vegat abhidhavato brusham. Bhitam prapannam paripati adbhayan. Mrityu pradhavat aranam tamimahi. He says, there is actually a serpent which is chasing all of us and we are running from this serpent. Yakashanesho balinontako ragat. And we are running full speed and the serpent of time, Kala, he is waiting to devour us and is right behind us. Prachanda vegat abhidhavato brusham. He is not crawling. Prachanda vegat. He is going full speed. And we are also running full speed. Bhitam prapannam paripati adbhayan. So Gajendra is saying, now as I am running, let me take shelter of Lord Vishnu. Because when this snake comes, snake of death comes right behind me and she sees, the snake sees that I have taken shelter of Vishnu. Then what happens? What happens when the snake of death sees Lord Vishnu and sees that this devotee has taken shelter of Lord Vishnu? Bhitam prapannam paripati adbhayan mrityu pradhavat aranam tamimahi. Then the snake of death starts running away from Lord Vishnu in fear. So Gajendra is praying that let me take shelter of that Lord who can save me. Because everything else will be taken away. Actually, this reminded me, His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj was saying in America, there was a very famous man who wrote a book on jogging for health. He was a great jogger. Actually, after he wrote this book in the 1940s or 50s, jogging became very popular. People running, very famous man. So he was jogging, and one day while jogging, he got a heart attack and he died. So Maharaj gave the purport that he was running every day. He was running away. He was trying to run and keep good health so that he can run away from death. He was running away from death, but little did he realize that he was running towards his death. So that's our situation. So we have to be careful about where we place our shelter, where we take what we take shelter of. Gajendra was intelligent. And Dhruva will also become intelligent now. He will learn from his mother. And because this helpless dependence on Krishna is the best vehicle, Krishna, he rides on that. He comes to our rescue. Speaking about Gajendra's pastime, Pejavar Swami, he was giving a very nice purport to this pastime. He was saying that, Madhvacharya writes in his commentary, that when Gajendra was desperately calling out to Lord Vishnu for help, Lord Vishnu was going in with Garuda and he was telling, Garuda, go fast, I want to save my devotee Gajendra. And Garuda was telling, oh Lord, I'm flying fast. But Vishnu said, no, faster, faster. He said, I can't. And then Vishnu said, fast, fast. And Garuda got so tired, because Vishnu was telling him to go faster, that Garuda collapsed. He became unconscious. Then Vishnu carried Garuda on his shoulder. And with one, and he was running. And with one hand he took water and he was trying to feed water to Garuda so that Garuda gets, you know, comes back. And as he was running with feeding water to Garuda, Vishnu's dhoti slipped off. And Lord Vishnu was trying to pull his dhoti on the one hand, feeding water to Garuda on the other hand, and he was also running to protect Gajendra. Madhvacharya writes, this, he gives this graphic description to explain how desperate Lord Vishnu was to come and protect Gajendra. So the Lord is more keen that we go to him, we take shelter of him, than we are. We just have to turn to Krishna and then we get shelter of Krishna. So this is a very important lesson we can learn from this section, that shelter of material assets, material possessions will eventually let us down. They will betray us. There is also another lesson we can learn. This is a negative lesson. In the sense, don'ts. We should not do this. And that is from Suruchi. What was her behavior? Harsh speech. The power of negative sound vibration. It can hurt. So, just I'll recapitulate before we go ahead. First lesson we learned was, what are they? First one, enthusiasm for hearing and chanting. Second lesson we learned was, material assets, material shelter will let us down. And the third lesson we are learning now is Suruchi's behavior. We should be always avoiding harsh speech. Like Suruchi did, she was using harsh speech and she hurt Dhruva. Krishna says in the Gita, Anudvega Karam Vakyam, Satyam Priyam Hitam Chayat. We should speak the truth in a pleasing way for the benefit of the person. We should not hurt. It's said, there's a saying I read, tongue often breaks the nose. We should be careful of what we speak. And there is islands in Pacific Ocean, Solomon Islands, I heard long back. And these islands, there are timber industries, a lot of big trees. And these trees cannot be cut by ordinary axe and machines. And what they do is, the local people, they come below these trees and they shout abusive swear words for 1 month, 2 hours every day. 2 hours is the time they would have taken to chant 16 rounds, but they prefer to give galis to the tree. 2 hours non-stop, they abuse. And then, after that, 1 month, then they cut the tree, immediately dies, collapses. Negative sound vibration effect. The tree loses all whatever life force. It becomes weak. Contrast to this, we have in Scotland, I heard about one community called Findhorn Community, which is expert. They have created a type of gardening called as Deva Gardening. Deva, interesting name, where they create positive sound vibration and they chant certain mantras, hymns, and they have created flourishing crops and flowers in barren lands where nothing should logically grow. Beautiful flowers have come because they spend time, they speak, they certain way they chant certain hymns. So they're able to do with positive sound vibration. Actually, if you go to any trendy urban bookstore, you will find at least half a dozen manuals on Deva gardening manuals. They're very popular. So the point I'm trying to make is, I'm not trying to bombard you with all general knowledge information, but the point is power of sound vibration, how we talk, how we deal, and our words can have a lot of impact. So we should be careful how we present ourselves as devotees. There's a story of I think once Gaurang Prabhu was saying this. Two frogs were in the well, in one deserted well, and they were about to die. And all the frogs above told them that you cannot jump up, it's impossible. You are destined to die. Give up the fight. But they were trying. And one frog said, they are right actually, no point fighting. So he gave up the fight and he died. But the other frog kept fighting, kept trying. Eventually he came out. And all the frogs surrounded him and said, we are impressed, how did you do it? We were discouraging you all the while. This frog said, actually, I am deaf. I thought you were encouraging me. I am hard of hearing. I can't hear properly. So I thought you were telling me, come up. And so I took it positively. So imagine, sound vibration, somebody, the way he perceives, the way he hears, so easily we can hurt someone. But sometimes we may be kind, we may speak good words, nice words, we may not be harsh in speech, but our intention may not be kind. Like, you know, we may be very nice. Isolina Niranjan Swami Maharaj gives this beautiful analysis in his book, Taking Care of Devotees. He writes how sometimes devotees may have good speech, may be caring, may be nice, but if the intention is not nice, then eventually the other person will feel hurt. So he was giving an analysis that how when he joined the temple as a young brahmachari, he had come from a Western background, he was struggling with this and so many issues, and the temple was in poverty. But he says he got so much love and affection from his temple president, Traya Prabhu, that he felt a great sense of security just by the kind words and loving behavior of the temple authorities. So Traya Prabhu would come to him every day and would pat him on the back and would say, "How are you, Prabhu? Are you all right? Are you getting rest?" You see, it made a lot of impact on him that somebody cares for me, people care for me and they love me. And then they would tell him Prabhupada pastime every day, something. So Niranjan Maharaj, as a young new bhakta, felt being cared for. So he writes in his 30, 40 years of realizations in Krishna consciousness, he says there are two ways of taking care of devotees. One is, I take care of this devotee because he is the only one who knows driving in the temple. Or I take care of him because he is the only one who is expert in computers. I take care of him because he is the only one who can play nice mridanga or do nice kirtan or give good lectures. I'll take care of him. So his analysis is, if we take care of people and if we are kind and nice with this motive, although it is good motive in the sense we want a person to be engaged in Prabhupada's service and we want Krishna's mission to expand, but in Kali Yuga people are so dull-headed, they will not consider your good motivation. At some point of time, this person will feel that he has been exploited or he may feel that he has been used. This is one way of taking care. He said, the other way of taking care is, I take care of you, not because you are a good singer. I take care of you because I am interested in your Krishna consciousness. I am interested that you develop attraction for Krishna. I take care of you because I want you to develop taste for Krishna consciousness. I want you to develop taste for holy name. So with that genuine concern, when you take care and you also engage him in different services, eventually that concern comes out. And the person will eventually give his whole life for Krishna and Prabhupada. So therefore, we have to learn from this episode that we have to be having proper speech and also proper intention. So Suruchi is teaching us through our behavior. Another thing we learn is that this harsh speech of Suruchi was because of pride. Strong feeling of, I am somebody special. The king loves me more than the other co-wife. Actually, it is not just the queen. Anybody who becomes a favorite or who is favored, he can easily become victim of this feeling that I am great, I am superior, I am better. It's not actually only the karmis. Sometimes even as devotees, you know, we may become favorite of somebody and we may think I am better or I am good. Even practicing Krishna consciousness, the best philosophy, we have got the best process. So devotee, if he feels that, yeah, I've got the best philosophy, so I am the best. A devotee never thinks that he is better than anyone. A devotee thinks he may be fortunate. There is a difference between feeling better and feeling fortunate. So you may think, I am more fortunate that I have got Krishna consciousness. But he is actually better than me. If he gets Krishna consciousness, he will become better than me. He is actually better than me. It's just that he doesn't know about Krishna. So Suruchi's problem was, she was convinced that she is better, she is best, she is favorite of the king. So she acted out of vanity. She chastised Dhruva. So just imagine if Suruchi was non-envious, if she was not proud, and if her sense of security was not in the fact that the king loves her, what she would have done seeing Dhruva on the lap? She would have encouraged Dhruva. Or maybe she would have spoken good things about Suniti to the king. But that was not to be because of her pride. Actually, when a devotee, because he is favored by some, see, it's natural, somebody will become favorite of someone because we are all persons and we may have liking for some people. So if we are liked by someone, if that happens ever by some devotees, a devotee never feels that he is great or he is better than others. So Suruchi is teaching us the dangers of pride. Actually, Vasudev the leper, when Mahaprabhu embraced him and cured him of his leprosy, he became scared. He became sad. He said, now my leprosy is gone. I'll become proud because I've got good, beautiful body. It was better when I had leprosy because I was humble. He was scared of pride. Mahaprabhu said, don't worry. Keep chanting. Serve devotees. So this is, so therefore, we have to understand that as devotees, we have to be more conscientious, more careful to a fault when we get some success, some materially tangible success in Krishna consciousness. Suruchi was the favorite of the king, but she became a victim of pride and she acted out of pride. So this is very, very dangerous. How to check ourselves from this pride? There are many things on this can be discussed. This is a whole different subject on this, and I don't have much qualification to speak on the subject. But an interesting story I was sharing last Sunday in our counselor's meeting, and this story inspired me very much. That we have to ask ourselves, whenever we are disturbed by some facilities not being given, or some, you know, when we are being disturbed by envious thoughts or pride afflicting us, we should ask ourselves the question, why I came to Krishna consciousness? When I came initially, what was the motive? Actually, if you analyze, when we came, initially we just wanted to chant and dance and be happy. No, we just wanted to enjoy the simple process of Krishna consciousness. But somewhere we started getting respect. People started appreciating us. And then we start identifying with that rather than our core activity of hearing and chanting. So then all the problem starts. The mind plays truant. You know, it starts going bizarre. It starts giving us so many. It starts imagining and perceiving problems and prejudices. So I was reminded of a nice story that there was an old man who was very disturbed by children playing cricket outside his house. So he thought, if I go and shout at them, they'll play more. Don't play. They'll come and play in the daytime, nighttime, all the time. So how to stop them from playing? So he got a good idea. He saw that these children, there is one or two leaders. So he called the leaders. He said, I beg you. Actually, please play cricket 24 hours. I'm a great fan of cricket. And now I'm retired. I can't play. I just love to see you play cricket. For my sake, please. He started crying. Please play cricket. I'll give you. He started giving them. He gave them 100 rupees. He said, this is my donation. Please take. So they were happy. Oh, okay, okay. They're enjoying playing also. And they're getting donation also. So they started playing. And then as they went, he said, please come tomorrow also. Every day, before playing, please come and take money from me. I want to give it as a token of love. So next day they came. They said, no, not needed. But next day they came. And again, this man with tears in his eyes, he said, thank you for playing cricket. And he again gave them 100 rupees. And third day, like that, he gave for a few days. 3-4 days. And then fifth day when they came, he said, actually today I did not get my pension. So I'll give you only 10 rupees. He gave 10 rupees. Then after a few days when they came, if I don't have any money, and he gave them 1 rupee. But what happened? By this time, the children had got so addicted to this getting money. When they got 1 rupee, this man, boy said, leader of the boys said, 1 rupee? You think we are so low class that we'll play for 1 rupee? We don't want a rupee. We'll go and play somewhere else. They went to some other place. Actually, Mayadevi is like that old man. And we are all like that simple, innocent children enjoying our cricket of chanting and hearing. So if Mayadevi comes and confronts us directly and says, whenever we have faced opposition for hearing and chanting, devotees become more aggressive in their hearing and chanting. Now, the parents say, don't go for Hare Krishna program, we'll go more. So there is a sense of excitement in going and fighting against Maya like that. But Maya comes subtly. So we get respect, honor, appreciation. And then we start feeling, wow, I'm getting reciprocated. So somebody, people are recognizing me. Yeah, now they know that I'm a nice devotee. Yeah. And then our sadhana, our devotional service becomes dependent on these activities. And then when we see after some time we don't get this, then we get disturbed. And eventually a stage may come when we may feel, hey, nobody loves me, nobody respects me, they don't care for me, I don't want to be here. I'll go somewhere else and do my hearing chanting. It may happen like that. So we have to ask ourselves, why I came? Why I came to Krishna consciousness? What was giving me pleasure at that time? Is the same thing giving me pleasure now? Is that hearing and chanting and wonderful association of devotees taking prasad together, is that giving me happiness now? If it is not giving me, that means there is something wrong with me. Of course, there will be issues. We have to solve the issues. But pride is so deadly that it makes us think that the whole world is wrong and I am the wronged. So therefore, we have to be careful, and we can learn this from Suruchi's example. This is the third lesson. Sorry, the fourth lesson. Dangers of false pride. Another lesson we can learn from King Uttanapad. What was King Uttanapad doing? He was neutral. He was sitting quietly. He could have solved the problem, isn't it? Dhruva is sitting on his head. He's just quiet. And Suruchi chastises him. He doesn't say anything. And he goes away. So from this we can learn the responsibilities of a leader. Or rather in this case, irresponsible leadership. What is three mistakes Uttanapad did? One was, he was partial. And he, as a leader should be impartial. He should be free from partiality. So he did that. Second mistake was, he was attached to his wife, first wife. That means he was attached to sense gratification. So when any person is in a leadership position, and if he's attached to sense gratification, then he will create problems. Leader should be free from the desire for sense gratification. And third, actually, he should have given physical and emotional protection to his dependent, that is Dhruva. But he failed to do that. Dhruva was depending on his father. So leader has to give physical and emotional protection to his dependents. Secondly, he should be free from the desire for sense gratification. And thirdly, he should be free from partiality. And nowadays, if you see the leadership in the society, if you see the politicians, the ministers, all the three are rampantly present. In fact, I was shocked when Devamrut Prabhu was once telling us that in one minister, he was actually told by the media. He was accused of nepotism, of taking his own nephew in one important government post. He was not qualified. For this interviewer asked him that you took your nephew for this post. Aapke bhanje ko, you took your bhanja in that post. How can you do that? So this minister spontaneously was so low class, he spontaneously replied, what do you mean? Obviously I took my bhanja. Will I take your bhanja? I'll take my bhanja because I'm the minister. It's natural. He gave that answer on media actually. So it's people think it is natural to be like this. And sense gratification, you don't talk about it. I mean it's so common. Some municipal elections, some minister, some political party won. And they celebrated by going to the whole cabinet went to Mauritius to celebrate a few years ago. I was shocked. I said, this is happening in our society. So these things happen. So we have irresponsible leadership in the society. We have pride and arrogance. At such time, we have to take lessons from, learn from Suniti. Her behavior is most exemplary. And we will see what she does now. Now that Dhruva is disturbed and he runs and he goes to his mother, Suniti. So how does Suniti handle this situation? This is very, very instructive for all of us. So we have discussed so far five lessons. First was eagerness and enthusiasm to engage in hearing and chanting. Second, material source of shelter and security will always let us down. Third, dangers of harsh speech we should always avoid. Fourth, false pride born out of false ego is also very dangerous. And fifth lesson we learned was leader should be responsible. Now, Dhruva is gone. Now what happens? So Dhruva, young boy, but he has Kshatriya blood in his body. He starts hissing like a snake. And because he's struck by the sharp words of his stepmother, he began to breathe heavily because of great anger. And when he saw his father is silent, he immediately left the place and ran to his mother. When Dhruva Maharaj reached his mother took him on his lap, took him on her lap. She patted him, she caressed him. And she was also very sad that she was being neglected by the king. But she controlled her sadness, she controlled her emotions. And she told her son, my dear son, don't wish bad for anyone who inflicts harm on you. Don't wish inauspiciousness for others. Anyone who inflicts pain on others will suffer himself from that pain. So forgive and forget. And then she tells him, but my dear boy, whatever Suruchi has spoken actually is very harsh to hear, but it is true. You have to take shelter of Narayan. She is correct. So she tells him, take shelter of Lord Vishnu by worshipping his lotus feet. Your great grandfather Lord Brahma acquired a lot of power. Your grandfather Swayambhu Manu acquired success. And all the demigods get all their powers from Lord Vishnu. So she is now encouraging her son to take the positive message in Suruchi's chastisement. And finally she tells him that just take shelter of Krishna. You came to me crying because you're insulted by your stepmother. But I'll tell you honestly, I cannot do anything. But Krishna is so kind to his devotees that if you go to him, the combined kindness of millions of mothers like me will be surpassed by Krishna's affectionate and tender dealings. When everyone fails to mitigate one's misery, Krishna is able to help that devotee. So my dear Dhruva, there is no one who can help you right now except Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu. Nanyam tata padma palasha lochanad dukha chidam te mrigayami kanchanam yo mrigyate hasta grihita padmaya shriyetare ranga vimrigyamanaya. She says, I am convinced, my dear child, nanyam tata, there is nobody other than Lord Vishnu who can give you shelter. Dukha chidam te mrigayami kanchana. I have seen everywhere, I have seen everything. The only person who can remove your dukkha is Lord Krishna. And interestingly, yo mrigyate hasta grihita padmaya. Lakshmi Devi, she have a lotus flower in her hand and she is constantly serving this Vishnu. And all the demigods, Shriye Tarer, all the other demigods are desperate to get mercy of Lakshmi Devi. They want her blessing upon them, but Lakshmi Devi is taking shelter of Lord Vishnu. So this is the instruction she gives to Dhruva. So this is the pastime we have discussed. So Dhruva goes to his mother crying. Mother says, don't wish bad for anybody and actually take shelter of Vishnu. So this is a very, very instructive section for all of us. We can learn many lessons from here. What we learn is one of the most important lessons. This is lesson number 6 in today's class. And that is the need to develop positive attitude in life. Positive attitude in life is very important. Suniti is teaching us not to be negative. She is telling her son, if you try to hurt someone who has hurt you, you will face the consequences. And she is giving the positive, you know, thing that she is saying. Suruchi has actually given an excellent idea. Take shelter of Narayan. The saying, somebody gave me a nice saying. Forgiveness is the best gift you can give to yourself. You will only feel happy. So we have to see positive, even when we face certain devastating situations like this. Suniti is able to see positive instruction in Suruchi's heavy chastisement, which is actually a result of false pride. When Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur was bought one newspaper article where Hare Krishna was criticized like anything, Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur saw that article and he said, very good article, because so many times Krishna is mentioned in this. So whoever has written this article will get purified. They will make advancement like that. Even Prabhupada was encouraging. He had very tremendous positive attitude. When Giriraj Maharaj saw this, he heard, you know, as a young brahmachari, he heard this song everywhere. In 1970s, early 70s, this Dham Maro Dham song became popular. So he heard Dham Maro Dham. So he asked somebody, what is the meaning? So he said, meaning is Dham Maro Dham Miti Jayagam. So if you, all your anxieties and stress will go away if you chant Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. So he thought, wow, very devotional. So he took a movie ticket and he went and saw the movie. He sat inside the theater. And after a few minutes, he realized this is not devotional. immediately got up and he came out. He was completely bewildered and disturbed. And he got very angry and upset. He told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, they are spreading bad propaganda about Hare Krishna. They have made this bad song. And Prabhupada was very positive. Prabhupada said, don't worry. After some time, people will forget Dhammarodham, but they will remember Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. That they will remember. That part they will remember. So Prabhupada had tremendous positive attitude. So we will face obstacles. We will face oppositions in our preaching. But this is very important. When we are talking about the lesson of positive attitude, we should know this positive attitude is not like what the karmis teach positive attitude. Therefore, we have to learn two more lessons from Suniti, which is lesson number 7 and lesson number 8. Suniti's positive attitude is not some, you know, these management gurus, they psych you up. Pep talk, they give you a pep talk and they psych you up. Be positive and think positive. It's not like that. That is not the positive attitude that Suniti is having. Her positive attitude is coming from a strong tolerance. She has developed strong tolerance against persecution and being deprived of certain facilities. She's actually been hurt. She's been ignored by the king. She's going through tremendous pain, but she's exhibiting tremendous tolerance. So it is because of this tolerance that she's having the power of positive attitude. Sometimes when we are faced with some problem, if we react angrily, then we are equally guilty. But we may not react, even if we are right, but if we react, the problem is we become disturbed. So let us tolerate. Situations are put in our life where we have to learn to tolerate. And because of this tolerance, what happened to Suniti? She could see Krishna's hand in this whole picture. And she could give proper guidance to her son to go and take shelter of Krishna. So it's very important. Suniti's tolerance is coming at a time when the leadership is attached to sense gratification and irresponsible. King Uttanapada was irresponsible and he was blindly attached to his wife. And also Suruchi was displaying pride. These three were serious problems in the kingdom. Attachment to sense gratification, irresponsibility and pride. At such a time, innocent Dhruva was harassed, was disturbed because of these three. What rescued him? Good instructions, Suniti, given by a personality who has practiced strong tolerance. Suruchi means attachment to pleasurable objects. Suniti means good instructions. So Suniti has given excellent instructions and she has tremendous positive attitude because of her tolerance. So tolerance has come to help at a time when irresponsibility in the leadership, attachment to sense gratification and pride was rampant. So in our society when we are preaching, we see that the modern society leadership is irresponsible. They are attached to sense gratification and there is tremendous pride. At such a time, when we have strong tolerance and dependence on Krishna, we can guide innocent people who are like Dhruva, who want shelter, we can guide them to Krishna. So preacher has to cultivate tolerance. Srila Prabhupada therefore writes in Krishna book, one's greatness is estimated by one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. So tolerance. Again, we have to understand one more important point. This tolerance is also not, again, artificial, you know. There is a lot of exploitation going on. I'll tolerate. No. Just like positive attitude, even tolerance can be little artificial if you simply keep tolerating without having a higher principle. This tolerance will ultimately become like a volcano and it will explode. So tolerance has to be balanced by another important factor which Suniti is revealing. That is another quality which also we have to learn, and that is tremendous faith in Krishna. Can you imagine what Suniti is doing? She is sending her 5-year-old son to the forest to take shelter of Lord Vishnu. Which mother will do this? She is an ideal mother. The scriptures say, Sa Guru Sa Pita Chapi Sa Mata Bandavopi Sa Shikshaye Chet Sada Smartum Harer Nameva Kevalam. Sa Guru, Pita, Mata, Bandhu. Is that person is qualified to be Pita, Mother, Bandhu, Guru, if Shikshaye Chet Sada Smartum Harer Nameva Kevalam. one who helps us to take shelter of Krishna and Krishna's holy names. If our parents, if our spiritual master is encouraging us to do this, then they are qualified. They are actually ideal. So Suniti is an ideal mother. She is not, don't think she is irresponsible that she is sending her child to the forest. She is revealing tremendous faith in Krishna. So therefore, we have to now cultivate faith in Krishna. And Krishna can do wonders. In Bulgaria recently, a Krishna Kripa Prabhu sent this mail. In Bulgaria, the devotees, after the communist government was taken over and devotees were trying to preach, the new government, they tried to ban all the new age religions, and Hare Krishna was one of them. So devotees were in anxiety. So they came outside the parliament where this meeting was going on. For many days, these meetings were going on. They came and they were intensely chanting every day, and they were distributing pamphlets and only praying to Krishna. And imagine what happened after the meeting of 7-8 days meeting. The government banned all the new age religions except Hare Krishna. For the Orthodox Church of Bulgaria, they got so upset. They started a major campaign. And they were about to launch it the next day. And the devotees again intensely prayed, chanted. And next day, what happened? The Orthodox Church, main church of Bulgaria, they got divided into 3 divisions because of internal politics, and that got completely messed up. So that propaganda was stopped. The devotees are able to carry on. So the devotee realization is not simply that Krishna protected them, an amazing realization that because they were intensely depending on Krishna and taking shelter of Krishna in this distressful situation, their faith in Krishna increased, and they felt that when we pray to Krishna, whether Krishna fulfills our prayers or not, that is a different story. But the prayers will guarantee our coming closer to Krishna. Prayers may not guarantee solving the problem. Krishna will give problems. Material world means so many problems will keep coming. But when we take shelter of Krishna and we invest our faith in Krishna, we come closer and closer to Krishna. Actually, Isolina Radhana Swami Maharaj was once giving class on this, and I remember an amazing analysis he made of Dhruva. He said this distress was so good. And he said, let us imagine Dhruva was sitting on his father's lap and the king took him and patted his head. And Surich also said, very nice, my son Uttam and Dhruva, very good. And then after this whole 1 hour playing, he comes to his real mother, Suniti, and says, mother, you know what happened? My father, he loved me. And then mother says, okay, sit down, Dhruva, I'll tell you something. And Dhruva sits, and then Suniti starts telling him, actually, we should take shelter of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is the only father, only mother. If she had explained to him nicely for half an hour about glories of Lord Vishnu and why we should take shelter of Lord Vishnu, would Dhruva have taken shelter of Lord Vishnu? You would have, the whole lecture when his mother was giving, you would have shaken his head and you would have smiled and you would have had, excellent lecture, mother. Excellent. Very nice point. I'll write down the notes. You would have written notes also. Because he was not in distress. So when material distress comes, material problems come, it is giving us an opportunity to come closer to Krishna and invest our faith in Krishna. Actually, why this is important, I'll just spend a few minutes on this. Because, you know, struggle will be there till our end. Problems will, we cannot say, Krishna, please don't give me any problems. That is a law Krishna has made. He will give us problems. And to struggle in spiritual life is not bad. If somebody says, Prabhuji, I'm struggling in Krishna consciousness, that is not a disqualification. To struggle is good. Once Dwarkadish Prabhu, Isolina Pradhana Swami Maharaj of Dwarkadish Prabhu. So, Prabhu, how are you doing in spiritual life? And he said, Maharaj, I'm struggling. Maharaj said, thank you very much. Keep struggling. Struggle is not bad. But to keep struggling till the end of our life, we need faith in Krishna. If we don't have faith, we keep tolerating, struggling and tolerating, we'll go crazy. Brahmaji's prayer, what does he say? Tatyanu kampam sumikshamanu bunjana evatma kritam vipakam ridvag vapurbir vididam namaste jivetayo mukti pade sadaya bhak. We have to tolerate and simultaneously remember Krishna favorably. When these two happen, then we can tolerate. And then we can have positive attitude. Then we can guide others. So what Suniti is revealing is tremendous faith in Krishna. Struggle will be there. But if we don't develop, don't cultivate faith in holy name, faith in Krishna, then we will not be able to struggle whole life. So it is an emergency. It's an emergency for us to develop faith in Krishna, to do whatever it takes to increase our faith in Krishna. In the Gita, Krishna says a very scary verse. Agyascha ashuddhadanascha samshayatma vinashyati nayam lokosti na paro na sukam samshayatmana. So three types of people. Agya. Agya means ignorant. He doesn't know anything about scriptures. Agya. But some people, they know scriptures, but they don't have faith. Yeah, this is some grandmother's story. Ashuddhadana. They are ashuddhadana. They have knowledge, but they don't have faith. But worse is, somebody who has knowledge, he is not agya. He has faith also. He is not ashuddhadana. He has shraddha. But he is samshayatma. He is doubting. He doesn't have that faith that this will work for me. He says, theek hai, scriptures theek hai, but mere ko ye kaam nahi karega, shayad. But holy name, okay, I've heard lectures, but to me, I'm not sure. So he doesn't take shelter of the process because he's samshayatma, he's doubting. So Krishna says, such a person, nayam lokosti na paro na sukam samshayatma. Such a person will never be happy neither in this world nor that other. Means he'll be miserable. He can't enjoy materially also, he can't enjoy spiritually also. He's always doubting. So we have to internalize the process and develop strong faith in Krishna. So therefore, what we can learn from this whole episode is we have to have a strong positive attitude, which Suniti is revealing. But this positive attitude should be born from a culture of tolerance and cultivation of tolerance and strong faith in Krishna. Not just faith in Krishna, Suniti is also telling Dhruva, don't go to all the different gods. Exclusively Krishna. Because all the other gods are taking anyway from Krishna only. So better go to Krishna directly. Don't get deviated. Be vyavasayatmika buddhi. Be focused. Sometimes people say, I'll keep all gods happy. No need. All gods will be happy if you take exclusive shelter of Krishna. And we will not be focused. You know, you can't say, one day I'll go to IIT for one day class. Next day's subject I'll study, I'll go to VJTI college. Third day I will go to SPC college. You can't keep going to different colleges to study different papers. You will not get your degree. You will be focused. So let us all focus on Krishna. So faith means exclusive faith in Krishna, she is teaching. So this is very, very important. And then she tells, and then Dhruva, after hearing from his mother, what does he do? He, very interesting verse, Maitreya is saying, Dhruva, with deliberate consideration and with intelligence and fixed determination, left his father's home. He decided on his own. Deliberate consideration. He carefully understood what his mother said. And he took responsibility for that decision. And he left home. So this is another very interesting event that takes place. After hearing all this advice, Dhruva with determination takes responsibility for his spiritual life. And he leaves the home and goes to the forest. And Prabhupada writes here an amazing statement explaining how, this is another lesson. I forgot the number, which number lesson it is. Lesson number 9. Yes, thank you. Lesson number 9. That is, like Dhruva, we have to be proactive and take responsibility for our spiritual life. So what Dhruva did, we heard from his mother and he actually took an action. So we have to many times take an action. We have to surrender to Krishna. So Prabhupada writes here, Dhruva was insulted, his mother was insulted, but, just hear this statement, mere lamentation is useless. One should find out the means to mitigate that lamentation. The mother and son, therefore, both decided to take shelter of Krishna because that is the only solution to all problems. Therefore, mere lamentation is useless. We have to take shelter of Krishna and take responsibility. Sometimes we may say, we may just ask, you know, Prabhuji, aap batao kya karna chahiye? And then we just don't want to think also. And then Prabhuji says something. And then we do. We don't blindly. And then something wrong happens. Hey, Prabhuji told me. That's how it happened. We have to take responsibility for our spiritual life. We have to take some action. We have to surrender to Krishna. Radhesham Prabhu explains very nicely in his book, the circle of influence and circle of concern. He says, all of us, we are we are having many issues in our mind on which we have no control. They are all coming under the circle of concern. Oh, what will happen? Oh, he spoke like that to me. Or tomorrow there is recession. See, there are many issues which are not in our control. And if we keep thinking about them whole day, then that means we are in the circle of concern. We are just concerned. But we have to be in the circle of influence, which means there are many areas where we can do something. Like I can improve my chanting. I can read more scriptures. I can associate with devotees. I can speak nice about devotees. These are all in my control. They are in the circle of influence. I can do something about it. But instead of working on the circle of influence, we work on the circle of concern, and that circle of concern becomes very big. And circle of influence becomes smaller and smaller and smaller, and we become miserable. So a devotee should work more on his circle of influence, which is small, and let that become big, 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 big. That becomes so big, that circle of concern becomes small. So Dhruva is not sitting and just lamenting, oh, what happened? His mother and they are not sitting and they are not simply crying. Take responsibility and do something. Srila Prabhupada, the best example. This is a very nice pastime. Srila Prabhupada was in Allahabad with his family. It took him 15-20 years to write the manuscript of Bhagavad Gita. He called it as Gita Upanishad. That time they didn't have soft copies and they didn't have printout, Xerox. Just handwritten manuscript. Big, more than 2,000 pages, huge manuscript. 15 years of hard work, research from different acharyas, commentaries. He put it in his cupboard. And then he was on his business tour. He came to South India. He met one Muthuswami Chetty, who introduced him to one very rich man in Madras, Chennai, Birla of the South, he was called as. And this man was very inspired by Prabhupada. He was impressed. He said, I will sponsor your Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada became happy. That is, 15 years of hard work is now going to bear fruit. So very happily he came. And he opened his cupboard. That manuscript was missing. Desperately Prabhupada searched. He asked everybody. Everybody said, we don't know what happened. Nobody knew anything about it. So what did Prabhupada do? Next day, started again writing the whole manuscript. So he could have just, you know, gone into a lamentation phase. So therefore, many times we face setbacks in our spiritual life. Let us not just lament. Mere lamentation is useless, Prabhupada writes. Let us become proactive. Proactive spiritual warriors. Let us fight it out. Especially this happens during chanting. I don't know if you have this experience. When chanting, you know, sometimes one round goes bad. First round, we plan. I'll chant very nicely. First round goes bad. The second round, we are thinking, Are itna kharab gaya pehla mala. I couldn't chant. And by lamenting about the past round, the second round also goes bad. Then by the time we finish 15 rounds, we think, we realize, Are, I've got to chant nicely. But we feel 15 rounds have gone bad. Now one round, tomorrow I'll try well. And we just, that's when we have to fight it out, you know. 15 rounds, I don't know if this happens. Many times it happens. We lamented, oh, my mind has gone crazy. I can't chant. And then we miss out on doing good chanting for the remaining one or two rounds that we have. Because we are lamenting about the past. It's amazing actually. Psychiatrists have analyzed, they have proven by their study, that 60% of the worry that people have in this world are lamentation worries they have. 60% of the things, worry is about those things which never take place. And then they've given breakup. 12% of things which on which you have no control, and 20% which have already happened, something like that. And finally, 8% remains. 8% stress is caused by actual situation, actual real life problem. But we don't have any time for that because we are busy with the other 92%. So this happens when we chant. Many times it happens. We chant and our round goes bad. Few rounds go bad. Then we allow all the other remaining rounds also to go bad. So that is the time when we have to fight back. Because Krishna is not bothered whether our chanting is good or not. He is seeing our attitude. What is his attitude? Is he sincerely fighting? So if you are sincerely fighting with our mind and oh, I'll chant nicely. Mind is going, no problem. I'll again fight. You know, it's like, you know, when there is death, there is Sutta Kshamananda Prabhu gave this example. Somebody dies, shock, One time event, death. But the sutak, that remains for 15 days. So he said similarly, when we chant, mind has gone. And we realize, and then next 15 rounds also goes bad only. In lamentation about what happened. He says, no, now fight it out. Because Krishna is seeing our attitude of, you know, being responsible, being proactive, wanting to improve our spiritual life. In sports also, in Olympics or in other sports, they don't criticize the team for losing. You know, after the loss also, they shake hands. They see the attitude. I remember when I was in school, one football team from Europe came, a small team, insignificant team came to India. And India's best 11, India's full-fledged team was playing against that ordinary team. I think Dutch team. And our Indian team, all geared up. In the half-time, they were beaten 7-0 or something. And then, again, half-time later, again, they were getting lost. So, final 2 minutes were left for the match to end. And the score was like 13-0 or something. But next day, all the newspapers are criticizing the Indian team. This happened in Bombay only, this match. So, the criticism was not for losing the match so much. Because in the last 2 minutes of the match, the Indian players, they thought, abhi to haar gaye. So they would just kick the ball here and there and they were just casual. So that attitude was picked up by the newspapers. That haar rahe theek hai. But when you are losing, your attitude is what actually was bad and they criticized. So Krishna knows our mind is not in our control. Mind will go here and there. But when we realize our mind is wandering, and if we allow it to wander, if we don't fight back, then we are showing Krishna that there is some serious problem in my attitude. I don't want to improve. I don't want to struggle. So Krishna will not be pleased. So ours is actually in one sense, we have no control over the mind. But we have control over our choice, our desire to show Krishna. So let us work hard in our spiritual life. I'm telling all this for myself, by Krishna's arrangement, by Providence, you're all sitting in front of me. I'm sorry for sounding holier than thou, but so we are all struggling sadhakas, and for our purification, we have to struggle and take responsibility in our spiritual life and be serious. So like this, it's a long pastime, but we'll stop here now because it's 3 o'clock. And but very interesting story. I'll just summarize what we discussed so far. We discussed important lessons from Dhruva Maharaj's pastime. The first lesson we discussed was eagerness to glorify and hear about Lord Krishna. We discussed this when Maitreya is telling Vidura. Second lesson we learned was Dhruva feels shattered by not getting his father's shelter. So the second lesson we learned was material source of security will always let us down. And then third, we saw Suruchi chastising Dhruva and we learned the dangers of harsh speech. Fourth, Suruchi is acting out of false pride. So we learned the lessons of dangers of false pride. Then we discussed the responsibilities of a leader. We should learn from the mistakes of Uttanapad. Then sixth lesson we learned was from Suniti, 6, 7 and 8. That is positive attitude, which is born from tolerance and faith in Krishna. And the ninth and the last lesson is from Dhruva. Dhruva means determination. Determination and having strong, taking responsibility with strong determination for our spiritual life. This is the 9 lessons that we have learned. And now if you want to know what actually happened, when Dhruva went to the forest, he met one very interesting person on the way who discouraged him completely. And then did actually Dhruva go to the forest? Did he actually meet Lord Vishnu? Did he get what he wanted? If you want to know the answers to all this, please read 4th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we'll stop here now. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I'm sorry we don't have time for questions because it's very late. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.